Dan Dick out here for the ISO on the Gonzaga Media Network. We've got a great guest today, somebody who I had a chance to connect with a few months back, an assistant coach for the Wyoming Cowboys out of the Mountain West. I've seen him work at shoot-arounds and pregame in the past during my broadcast travels, but we had a chance to really talk hoops late spring, early summer. Somebody who I thought has a great outlook on the game. And excited to hear a little bit more about his past and his thoughts on the game. None other than Sundance Wicks from Wyoming. Sundance, appreciate you joining.
Does it sound weird when you say the name Sundance? Like, because I just feel like everybody that's, it's normal for me, but when someone goes Sundance Wicks, it's got to sound a little bit weird.
Well, you know what's funny is the little bit of time that we had a chance to kind of, you know, text and talk and get to know each other. You've got a great personality, and that personality shines with your name. So I guess the question I have is, how did the name come about in your parents giving you that name? Ooh,
that's a good one. I had to grow into it, too. I think it's kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. When I talk about the name, and that's why, just so we know this, like we're going to be full transparency here. I named my firstborn son Skywalker. So, you know, if I was going to get a weird first name, I told my wife, I said, look, you could pick our daughter's first name. And she picked Grace, which makes a lot of sense, because by the grace of God, we're fortunate to have a baby girl. But I said, I'm picking the boy's name. We get a boy, I'm picking it. And we got one, and I said Skywalker, and she didn't even flinch. So that's a testament to her. I'm not sure that was how it went with my mom and dad when they came up with Sundance. I think it was more like my dad's kind of a free spirit. He's a very spiritual dude. I mean, he is a spiritual savant in a sense, a lot of different religions, studies a lot of stuff. Now, we're born and raised Catholic. So we did the whole sit down, stand up, fight in Catholic church on Sundays. But when it came to Sundance, it was a weird time, right? There was Sundance sparkling wine, Sundance cigarettes. There was, my dad had a car, a Camaro with the sun paint on top of it, called a Sundance Mobile, 67 Camaro. He had a place that we live in Wyoming called the Sundance Ranch. That's what he dubbed it. But there was also Robert Redford, which is why I think I was named more after Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, because my mom had a crush on Robert Redford, which makes sense. I mean, blonde hair. I used to have nice flowing locks. Now I'm bald as a bald eagle. So those faded away at 26, which I do not wish that upon anybody, to be in your prime of life, you know, at 26 and all of a sudden go bald. I was hanging on way too long, Dan. But Robert Redford, I'm just going to give Robert Redford all the credit right here. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Paul Newman was a looker too. Now, I mean, that's, you grew up in that age.
So if I'm not mistaken, obviously Robert Redford was the natural in a great baseball movie.
Yes. Yes.
If there was going to be a basketball movie about you, your youth, your upbringing, and now your college coaching career, who would play that movie as an actor? Would it be Robert Redford or somebody else?
Yeah, I mean, me as a young kid, I mean, I got to give it to Robert. I mean, I used to be good looking. I used to be good looking. It's that old phase. They say you get better with time. I mean, that was opposite for me. I don't have the Benjamin Button effects like you do, Dan, where you just get, you know, better looking as you get older.
Too kind there. So, you know, let's jump into the basketball side of things. I'm always curious for coaches at the highest of the levels in college, Division I, and that's not a slight on Division II, Division III, NAIA, because I think there's a lot of great coaches and players at those levels. But what drove you to get into coaching and then be at a very high level with Wyoming?
That's a great question. And I don't ever look at, you know, I'm like you, I don't look at level, right? I don't see like, where's level, what's where we're at. I think, you know, early on, you can maybe, like when I was a younger assistant too, or a younger, you know, as a GA, you start thinking about what could be, what could I be, where could I go? But the first and foremost thing that I think about when I got into coaching was the influence, you know, the influence, who was influencing me, who was inspiring me. And I was very, very fortunate to grow up around a lot of great coaches. And I say that, I don't say that facetiously. I mean, like Mike Curry, my high school coach, is the all-time winningest coach in Wyoming high school basketball history. I mean, that dude won a lot of games, and he was the first coach to show me exactly a blueprint of, I've done this for 15 plus years. This is how we're going to do it. I've always done it this way, and this is success, and this is how it works. And so that's the first time you actually see a real blueprint for success. And then I was fortunate enough to go play for Don Meyer at Northern State University, who at the time when he retired, 923 wins was the all-time winningest coach in college basketball, regardless of level. And so you're talking about two coaches, you know, high school and college, that are winning close to 2,000 games and doing it in a very streamlined system style approach, where it's, you're going to adapt to the system. you're not going to recruit players and tweak it every year. You're going to actually adapt to the system. So it was unique to be with those two. And they influenced me at a high level because I wanted to be a businessman. I got an international business degree. I wanted to, you know, go work for a Fortune 500 company and see what I could do there. I've always been enamored with style and nice suits. I was about all the wrong crap. I mean, it was all the wrong crap, right? But then you learn real quick what's real and what's not, what's style and what's substance. And I think the influence was vastly important for me getting into college coaching, because I decided to do that. You know, basically when I'm almost done with my undergraduate degree, I knew I was going to try to go play professional basketball. And I played for a year in Sweden. And then Coach Meyer called me on the phone. This is a funny story. I love this story. It's like 3 a.m. Swedish time. And Northern had just won their first conference tournament. So under Coach Meyer, first conference tournament championship. We never won a conference tournament championship when I played. My best friend and now head coach at Northern Colorado, Steve Smiley, and I came in together. And Steve-O was my point guard for 4 years. And we won two back-to-back conference championships, but never the conference tournament championship. So they win it. Steve-O gets on the phone. He calls me over in Sweden. He's talking to me. I'm pumped up for it. It's my best friend. In tears, because I'm so excited. You know how it is, like when you feel like when the Zags are winning, right? It's my squad. Coach Meyer hops on the phone. Literally, they're cutting down the nets. He goes, any talks like this? He goes, Sonny, coach, listen. So I know your season's probably over there. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think you're going to be a very good professional and you're not going to make a lot of money. I mean, you're just not that good. So here's what you should do. You know, when you get back, just come to Aberdeen. You're going to be my GA for the next 2 years. I just think that's what you should do. All right, here's Steve. And I'm like, shit, coach. I mean, like, thanks, man. Like you're not going to be a very good pro. You'll never make a lot of money. Yep. He was right. I was making $1,800 a month. I mean, that's not, you're not living off that, you know? So he influenced me in a way where everything he said, I listened, because everything he taught translated. And I think that's important, is like, it's not just about basketball. It's beyond the box, right? Beyond the coaching box. And that was a big, big part for me, was I knew that I could help, if done correctly and educated correctly and informed correctly, I could help kids learn something outside the box, outside the lines. And so the influence was number one. Two, educationally, I love to learn. My mom's an educator. She taught for 42 years. I wanted a profession where I could continually learn, constantly improve. Is there a lifelong learning element involved? Jerry Krause talks about that all the time, the white wizard of Gonzaga. Yes. You know, are you a lifelong learner? Something you always want to dive deeper and deeper and down these rabbit holes. And Coach Meyer explored so many rabbit holes for me that I was like, man, you can do this forever. You can't learn at all. You can try, you can't learn at all. And I thought that was a big part for me too, because I knew you could constantly evolve in this profession. And then three, I think, is the impact, just the lasting impact. And we talked about beyond the box, but can you take what you're doing inside the lines and translate it outside the lines? And every day, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think of one of my former coaches, whether it's Monty Wilkins, who taught me in, you know, fifth and sixth grade for the Gillette Bulls in Wyoming, or Jim Henshaw for the Twin Spruce Junior High Warriors, ninth grade, or Coach Curry at Campbell County High School, or Coach Meyer, or Coach Gerke over in Sweden. Every single coach that I played for, there's not a day that goes by where you don't reference something from those moments in time. And that's impact, and that's lasting. And everybody talks about, well, what type of impact you want to have, or when you leave, or whatever, when you die. And I was like, it's not about that. It's just about every day, is there something that goes through your mind that you learned from someone that was important to you? And my coaches have always been some of the most important people in my life to me.
You know, that's so such a great answer. And, you know, you bring up a couple names that made me quickly think back, is we're a little more connected in the basketball world than I thought we were. Obviously, I know Rex Walter a little bit. Walter's a little bit. I know Jeff Linder a little bit because he coached at Boise State when I first met him. But you mentioned a couple guys like Steve Smiley. I've done broadcasting in some of the Northern Colorado games, and I'm talking to him. And he was AAU teammates with one of my college roommates, Richard Fox. The basketball world is so unbelievably small. And I know you just named about four or five coaches that have had an impact. But if you can put your finger on one coach who had the most impact, and then maybe one coach that you didn't work directly with, but you, but they had an impact to you from a distance where you're watching them, who would those two guys be?
I mean, the first one's really easy. I mean, it's Coach Meyer. I mean, in college, you're away from your parents for the first time, away from your family. You know, high school, you still get to go home. And if your family's wired the right way, then you go home and they ask you what happened at practice, and then they don't criticize their coach. They ask why you were so bad and why you were messed up and why you didn't do better, right? If it's wired correctly. Unfortunately, that's not the same. It's not that way for everybody. So in college, you know, your coach takes over as your parent for the most part. And that's the way I look at it. I still look at it that way. You're around these guys so much. And Division II is unique because, I mean, there's a head coach and assistant coach in Division II. There's not four or five guys and basketball operations and 16 managers. You know, it's just you get two guys, Paul Sather and Don Meyer, that you're going to be around every single day. And you better hope that those guys are teaching your son or daughter the things that you would be still instilling in them today if they were in your household. And Coach Meyer was, to a high level. Accountability and standards and expectations and how to treat people. So outside of the basketball realm, which he was, a master teacher, outside of that, just the life lessons that he imparted on you through the experiences of his former players, which is like, that's the most relevant thing to me, is if that's what coaches have, they have this train of coaches or players that they've coached, and they're all connected. And there's an engine and there's a caboose, but they're all connected from the first to the last. And you can go down that line and you can sit there and pull a lesson from every player that you've ever taught or ever been around. And you can take that lesson and hopefully impart that wisdom onto a player that you're currently coaching. And nothing's going to replicate experience, because life's best teacher, but the smart ones can learn from someone else's experiences. They can see something and go, that's stupid, I shouldn't do that. Or they can see something and be like, that was pretty smart, I should try to replicate that. And those are the ones that can grow really fast. And Coach Meyer was the best at that. He was the best at translating all that stuff to basketball, from basketball to life, from life onto the court. I mean, just back and forth. It was unbelievable. It was just seamless for him. He just lived it at a high level. And so that's the number one influence for me that I have actively worked with, played for as a player, and worked with as a coach. I was a GA with him for 2 years. And so he was, and you know, every coach, every player that ever played for Coach Meyer is going to say the same thing. I mean, just, you can't, I mean, Jerry Krause talks about it all the time. I mean, those two guys were connected at the hip from their Northern Colorado days. I mean, they just, he was unbelievable. And there's not enough words in the dictionary to describe, or adjectives to describe, the type of man he was for you as a player. And I know you feel that way about your coaches, but from afar, it's interesting. For me, I study a lot of coaches, and I'm love to just study like just different styles, methods, techniques, right? But someone that I really resonate with at a high level, and is ironic, is we were both assistants at the time at Northern Illinois. I was an assistant there, and PJ Fleck was the wide receiver coach. And PJ Fleck, as you know, he's a big row the boat, big energy, big juice guy. But there's a lot more to him than just his style. Right. And that's where I think the juice guys, the quote unquote, the stigma of being someone who's just an energy guy or juice guy, such as myself, where, you hear me say all the time, bring your own juice, get labeled and boxed in that, kind of pigeonholed in there. And, you're just an energy guy. Where's the stop? Where's the substance? And PJ Fleck just destroyed that for everybody. I mean, went to Minnesota and did it with high energy and high enthusiasm and high love and high character and all those things that everybody thinks that you shouldn't be as a coach. You should be crotchety and kind of mad and angry all the time, and never show vulnerability or a human side to you. And he just, I love him for that, because he was the same way in Northern Illinois, high energy, high character, and he was wherever he's been through it. And I really resonate with PJ, because there's Sabins of the world, there's Belichick's of the world, then there's Dabo's and PJ Flex, and they're all different styles of coaches. Right. Saban and Belichick are probably more closely aligned, but then there's Dabo, who probably works on a little more love and trust and chemistry than, the fluffy stuff, as the coaches in the profession like to say. And then there's Dabo and PJ, who are operating on high energy and high love and trust and really diving into the vulnerability and the humility side of coaching. And they're still successful.
That's an eye-opening answer, because a lot of times when I ask a similar question to a basketball coach, They don't go to a football coach or they don't go to a baseball coach. But I do agree with you that you can learn a lot from watching a coach in a different sport, because, and I've said this for years, and I don't think you and I've ever talked about this or anything, but I think it's important for kids to play multiple sports growing up, because they can learn what they're good at. They can learn how to be a role player in a different sport. They can be learned to be coached by different kinds of coaches. And so at the end, if they really want to be a great athlete, it helps them in the long run. But really, I guess the roundabout way to get to this next question is, how do you study coaches? Like, is there one or two attributes that jump out to me when you're studying a football coach, or you look at a baseball coach maybe on Wyoming's campus?
Yeah, it's funny.
What sticks out to you?
No, because it's like you're gonna be able to see all the coaches that you have at university, right? You're gonna be able to see Chad Callahan for volleyball, Coach Bull for football, Coach Carbon for soccer. You're going to be able to see all those. You're going to see Coach Ezel, and it was Coach Madison last year for women's basketball, and just watch them work, right? What I love about Ben McCollum at Northwest Missouri, and Ben,
sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Unbelievable coach.
Right. I mean, great, right?
Practices, shoot around. I called two or three of their games in the national title game, had him on the podcast. Most underrated coach in the country. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, I mean, and as funny as like Linder McCollum and Grant McCaslin at North Texas, you know, I call them the three amigos. They talk all the time. They're in constant communication. I was left behind the curtain here with Coach Linder, because now, knowing that those guys talk a lot, I realized that I appreciate the simplicity and genius in Coach Linder, which the simplicity and genius in McCollum, and the different personality style of Grant McCaslin. If you put those three in a room, they all three have different personality styles, but they're all three elite level coaches. And it's the same as when you're watching high performing teams or high performing coaches or high achievers. I think the first thing you look at is, one, what do their players say about them? That's the thing that I always pay close attention to, is the whispers, right? Is what, not what they're saying in the media. What are they whispering? So if you're on campus and you're listening to other players talk about their programs, you listen intently with the whispers. And if the whispers are loud praises, because they're not worried about what they say, because they love their coach so much, they love their culture, they love their program, you're probably in a good state. That coach probably has something going for him. When it comes to studying coaches outside of, let's just say, University of Wyoming or Northern State or wherever you're at, I'm one who just dives into post-game interviews. I love it. I love going into post-game interviews. You can look at me and you can pretty much find every post-game interview I did at Missouri Western as a head coach, and you're going to find that none of that crap was rehearsed. It's all pretty spontaneous and authentic, because I believe in the vulnerability side of this profession. I believe in the moment, not overly emotional and crazy, but like if you're feeling emotion, show it. If you're excited, if you were happy about your performance, say it. If you were upset, say it. But there's so many cookie cutter lines that comes to, you know, when you get into a press conference at the end of the games, you can listen to one, you can listen to them all. Right.
Yeah.
So I love listening to post-game press conferences, because I like to see if there's any real raw, authentic emotions that a coach has. And that also tells me how connected they probably are to their players and to their program. It doesn't mean there's not certain things that we all go to, because there are certain things that we all, if we don't meet those standards, that's probably what attributed to a loss. Or if we did meet those standards, if we did have the right discipline and effort, probably would attributed a win. And you'll hear Jeff Linder talk about discipline and effort a lot in a post game, because those are core values for us: collective grit and toughness, discipline and effort. If we have those, we probably came out on the right side. So there's those staples, but I love to listen to post game press conferences. You can read a book about anybody, but we all know that books are written through a lens, right? So that they're probably not going to write a book that's bad about somebody. be a weird one.
Doesn't sell a lot of books. Make a lot.
Doesn't
of
sell a lot of books, right? The negative people in this world would eat that one up. Oh, I'll take that right now. Jeez. But to me, it's there's a lot of clips out there. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of micro clips on Twitter and YouTube. But if you can get to a practice and watch someone work, says a lot about it. I love watching practices, any practice, doesn't matter what sport. because you learn something from everybody. If you really are that type of person, like I love learning. So you're going to learn something from everybody if you just go watch a practice.
So you're obviously at a great institution now in Wyoming, and any Wyoming fans that are going to listen to this are going to take that with a grain of salt, because my senior year, unfortunately, Wyoming knocked Gonzaga out of the NCAA tournament.
Oh, yeah.
It's always been this weird dynamic whenever I call a game as a broadcaster where I'll get somebody making a comment about Wyoming. But, you know, I look at Wyoming as being a unique university because it's the only Division I institution in the state. I don't see, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I knew you grew up in Wyoming, I don't see it as a basketball hotbed, but there is a huge passion for the game. I've called games in Laramie over the last few years, and every time I go there, I'm wowed by like the support that you guys get, and I think it's a great atmosphere. Give me your outlook on Wyoming youth to AAU and now being an assistant coach at Wyoming.
Yeah, it's funny. This is a great question because it really, you could go a lot of different directions with this, being born and raised in Wyoming, being from this state. Before we dive into this, the point I was getting with McCollum was, you know, you asked me, how do you know when you're watching coaching, or how do you study coaching? And his phrase was, you know, people always ask, well, what's your culture like? And Ben would say, well, come to a 5 a.m. weightlifting session and you can see it. You know, come to a practice come to Northwest Missouri for a week and you'll see it. And I believe that. I truly believe, like, that's when you study coaching and you want to see a great coach, don't go for a practice, because anything can be scripted for a day. But spend an invisible hour between 5 a.m. and 7 a.m. Spend an invisible hour at a practice. Go watch them weightlift. Go see what their culture is in a weight room. Go see what their culture is like in an individual workout. Go watch them practice for a week and see if they show up every day the same way. And then you'll know if you have something real, if there's something real going on there. So that was, to your point on the last question, where we got so excited talking about just, you know, coaches. Yeah, this is funny. This is weird. This is like, we're fanboying right now. growing up in Wyoming, you know, I grew up in it without the YouTube era, without the technology era. My dad and I were driving across the flyover states, as they call them, because nobody's coming to recruit Wyoming. So 99, 98, you're flying over South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska, maybe you're going in the Omaha area. You're flying over Montana. You're flying over those states. You're not going to recruit those states. So we were driving VHSs to Wayne, Nebraska, to Minnesota State University, Mankato. We were driving through the D2 hotbed and dropping off VHSs. Not like anybody was looking for a 6'4" average white guy from Wyoming. And so we did the old fashioned way. We went in the basketball office. If they were there, great. If they're not, we dropped it off. If they were there, we shook their hands, introduced ourselves. I'll never forget. I mean, we showed up on Mankato State's, back in the day, now Minnesota State, but Mankato State's campus, dropped the film off, and their head coach at the time literally just gave me an unofficial visit tour. I was like, this is pretty cool. Like, this guy's like, I mean, he probably doesn't have a lot of people dropping off, but that's still, you got to recruit schools that you want to go to. Kids nowadays want everybody to recruit them. But like, if you really like the school, why wouldn't you go try to recruit that school? My sister sent a VHS to Notre Dame after she dropped 41 in the state championship, and she was getting recruited by everybody west of the Mississippi, every offer, but she wanted to go to Notre Dame. Staunch Catholic girl, right? She wanted to go to the Grotto every day. She sends a tape to Muffet McGraw the year after they won the national championship. A week later, they're flying my sister out to Notre Dame, and she commits. I mean, that's a VHS in the mail to Notre Dame. So it's to me, like, that's what Wyoming recruiting is. Like, if you want to go somewhere, you better really put yourself out there. And you don't know it at the time, but it's still really, really hard. There's not a massive AAU presence here in Wyoming to get recruited out of Wyoming. Even the stigma of, if you're a really good Wyoming kid, which I was, I was player of the year, Gatorade player of the year. Mark Bailey ended up getting the scholarship, who knocked you guys out.
Yeah.
Mark Bailey, man. And he's a hell of a player. So like
about a 6'5", 6'6" wing, if I remember right. Good shooter slasher,
but also could bring the ball up the floor and was a secondary handler and really, really made plays and evolved as a player, not only in Wyoming, but grew through the University of Wyoming. And he was phenomenal for him. And Mark Bailey and I had head-to-head battles all the time, going back and forth. And so, like, did we both think we probably deserved a scholarship? Yeah, I thought I deserved one. He got one. But you know what, you take two Wyoming kids, that'd be weird to take two Wyoming kids in a time where Wyoming basketball wasn't, you know, high school basketball wasn't that great. And so there's that stigma of just because you're good in Wyoming, do you deserve a scholarship to the University of Wyoming? And that's hard. It's hard to balance, yeah, because of the lack of AAU footprint. You're going to have to go out of state, maybe to Idaho. You're going to have to go maybe down to Denver. And so growing up in there, knowing like if you did get a Wyoming player, the state really, I mean, those were some glory days back in the day with Mark Bailey. The state rallied around that. We got Hunter Thompson right now. To have a Wyoming kid on the roster is a big, big deal. They're going to follow you. And the reason you talked about it already, it's the only four-year university in the state, but it is the only four-year college in the state. So there's no Division IIs, no NAIs. It's all junior college. We're the only four-year university state, and we're the only state with one four-year institution and no professional sports teams. So there's literally nothing else except the University of Wyoming. And so why there's so much Pope pride is because this is the show. This is the only show in town.
And I have felt that,
yeah.
when I've made comments on Twitter in regards to broadcasting a game as the color analyst, and you know, somebody, many people will remind me of the loss, and that's fine. You know what? Wyoming was a better team that day, and that's awesome. But as a Wyoming kid, what are the pecking order of passions? Because obviously, yeah, you don't have the basketball opportunities maybe that other like metropolitan areas have. And so you don't get exposed to like the level of competition. Or what is the pecking order of interest for kids growing up?
Football has always been a big thing. Football will always be a big thing, right? There's a lot more scholarships, probably a lot more opportunity for football players. But, you know, rodeo is amazing. I mean, we had the National High School
Cody Wyoming Rodeo it was actually 2 years ago, almost to the day. Our family took a drive vacation during COVID. The Cody Wyoming Rodeo is awesome. I can't wait to go back.
Man, we hosted a National High School Finals Rodeo in Gillette. I mean, you're talking about every state bringing their best to the Camplex in Gillette, Wyoming. I've never seen such a spectacle. It's unbelievable. I mean, just, and that's a big deal. And we're flyover states, once again, you're not going to hear about a lot because maybe it's not as abundant, and it is here. I mean, that's why, you know, cowboys and cowgirls, they're always going to ride for the brand. So that's always going to be a big deal. Wrestling is a big deal. Football, basketball. I mean, you're kind of stuck in the idea of now, if you're good enough, they'll find you. Mm-hmm. And they're really going to have to find you. Like, you're going to have to really be good. I mean, think about J.C. Carroll. J.C. Carroll came out of Wyoming.
Utah State?
Yeah, Evanston, Wyoming. And J.C. Carroll came out of here and was torching the state of Wyoming. Almost like 30 points a game almost. And still vastly under-recruited. And then goes to Utah State and is the all-time leading scorer, kills it, like, right? He's still probably playing professionally. He probably played professionally until he's 60. I mean, he's just a dude who could hoop. But you're going to really have to prove it. Right. And that's kind of the go-to mentality out here, is they got to prove it. And if you can prove it, you're going to get the opportunity. But you're also going to have to take my mentality a little bit, is you're going to have to go recruit the schools you want to go to. You better really be active in that process. You better really be forthright and come at them and let them know. Because a lot of times it's those ones that fall in your lap that you're doing the recruiting and they're not recruiting you, but you kind of, I'm ready. I'm coming. Here I am.
Yeah.
And we always say we like people who want to be cowboys, right? You like people who want to come, yeah, to your school.
Well, you want them to be where they're headed or where they're going to be for, yep, what you hope is the next 4 years. You made the comment, prove it. Now, you as a player proved it. You played for a year, and then you came back and you started coaching. As a coach, correct me if I'm wrong, because I've only spent 1 year on a bench of any type of importance. But you have to prove it as a coach. You did it at Northern State as a grad assistant. You've had a number of stops as a Division I assistant. You spent some time as a head coach. I believe it was Missouri Western.
Yep.
How do you balance, as an assistant, your personal aspirations alongside, hey, I love Wyoming. I love where I'm at. I need to do a great job for this program, knowing that maybe in the back of your mind, you want to run your own program when the time is right. How do you balance all that?
That's a great question. I thought a lot about this because it's unique. like any profession, right? For me, being a head coach, and so people always ask, well, why would you go back and be an assistant again? And I love that question. And it's not as black and white as I want to be a head coach, I want to be an assistant. It's a combination of things. And so the first question you ask yourself when you're sitting as a head coach and you're running your own program is, can you let go of your ego? Right. So everybody has an ego, and we know that ego is the enemy, and we want an absence of ego. But at your core element, there's some sort of ego involved. And the hardest part of life is to try to destroy your own ego and to get that out of the way so you can think clearly about situations or any sort of circumstances that are coming your way. And so, can you be an assistant again? Can you let go of your ego? All right. I don't have a big ego. I'm fine. So can you be an assistant again? Well, why would I want to be an assistant again? So we break this down to this question. Why would I want to be an assistant again? Well, what aren't you very good at as a head coach? Okay. So I've done a deep dive on my studies as a basketball head coach, as an X's and O's basketball coach. I thought I was pretty good defensively. There's a lot of constants in defense that, you know, if you do a good job of rebounding, if you do a good job of guarding the basketball and keeping teams out of the paint, you had a pretty good chance at having a pretty good defense. Offensively, there's a lot of variables involved: talent, players, structures, schemes, spacing, respacing, manipulating spacing, all those things, shooting, all the variables that go into begin. I was not a very good offensive coach. So why would I want to be going assistant again? Well, I'd want to go work for a guy who's known as a really, really good offensive coach. Not to mention the fact that he's an outstanding defensive coach because of his principles, the structure, the constants that are involved, but an elite offensive mind, right? Because of his ability to strategize. I liken Coach Linder to that of like more of a football coach. And football coach, there's a scheme and a strategy to attack that team for that game based on their defensive coverages. What is this defense going to be? A good quarterback can read the blitzes and understand its checkdowns. Coach Linder is the same way when it comes to attacking other teams. It's never going to be the same game plan. It's not like, here's our offense, let's go run it. It's, oh, this is what they do? Well, here's our strategy, here's our scheme for this game based on what they do or what we think they're going to do. To me, that's genius. It's a simplicity that's genius. Is it's not just a broad, we're running flex, let's run flex till we die. Yeah. And, you know, if we lose by 30 every game, we'll lose by 30 every game because we're running flex and we don't want to adjust. That's where I could have grown as a head coach. I thought, I've studied to myself in depth and fired myself 3 times as a head coach, Dan. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm a very, very aware guy of what I'm good at, what I'm not good at. And I wasn't a very good X's and O's guy. My players bailed me out a lot. They had pretty good players. And they bailed me out my second year. And so that's why could I go be back an assistant? Well, I got blind spots. I need them exposed. And Jeff Linder is the best at exposing blind spots. He is I call him a basketball black belt. He's literally a black belt teacher, you know, basketball black belt teacher. He's going to take that white belt and he's going to groom you and groom you and groom you, yeah, and expose your blind spots and expose you and expose you and expose you until you finally have been trained enough that he's going to advance you to brown belt. Right. And so it's tutelage for me. It's a master and it's an apprentice. And that's why I could go back and be an assistant again.
You know, that's a great answer. And I agree with that in so many levels, because I think the best basketball coaches see everything, they understand everything, but then they simplify what their attack philosophy is and then how they have to attack the team that they're playing against. Too many coaches that I've talked to over the years, when I see them at shoot arounds or I'm talking to them with different things, or we got to do this, and it's like an 8 to 10 bullet point list with sub points, where really at the end of the day, you need to create 1 or 2 advantages and then take advantage of those over and over and over again. And so I love that answer. So let's stay on the topic of Jeff Linder, because I had a game or two in Laramie last year. One of them unfortunately got canceled literally an hour before tip off due to a COVID.
That was the Boise game. That was the Boise game.
It was the Boise game. Yeah. I can't remember if it was you guys or Boise, but the night before, Coach Linder gave me I texted with him and I asked him, hey, I get in at like 8 o'clock. It's New Year's Eve. What's the best restaurant to go to for such and such in Laramie? Unfortunately, the restaurant was closed, but give me your best restaurant for in Laramie, Wyoming, if you're trying to get an NIL deal yourself.
Oh gosh. NIL deal. Well, okay. But I'm a big pizza guy. Okay. So if I want an NIL deal and like the pizza places, Crowbar just got shut down, I think, for a little bit, and they had really good pizza, but I'm a big fan of Alibi. They got the stone great pizza, the big stone back there. They slide the pizza in. It's a little personal size. They got a spicy pepperoni. It's solid. They got a pulled pork pizza. I mean, it's got a lot of different styles and flavor in there, which is kind of my swag right there. So I would be trying to get probably a pizza NIL deal or a bourbon NIL deal. If anybody has a good bourbon and can make a phenomenal old fashioned, that's kind of my go-to. But that would be bourbon and basketball. We could call it bourbon basketball and hopefully not burnt pizza.
You might have your own podcast right there. So staying on the topic of Laramie, is an interesting city. I've been there a number of times for broadcasts, and you as an assistant coach and your staff have to sell it to out of town high school recruits. I think you guys have had one of the best quiet off seasons as far as transfers in the college basketball world. How do you recruit Laramie and the University of Wyoming to kids that you're recruiting?
Quiet will always be kind of how we do it, because there's not a lot of glitz and glam out here. And that's part of the process for us. I think once again, awareness comes into play here when you're recruiting, especially at certain locations, and based on your destination. But you got to know who you are and who you are not. And who we are not is UNLV. Okay, we're not Vegas, so we can't sit here and be like, "Hey guys, welcome to." We joke and call it Laradice, but it's Laradice. It's Laradice Paradise. It's beautiful. There's the Laramie Valley surrounded by the mountains. You got the Snowies. You got Happy Jack. You got Medicine Bow. You got the Rockies a little bit away. It's a gorgeous place. So know who you are and who you are not. And the types of kids we're recruiting aren't the kids that like the scene. If you like the scene, then you're not going to make it in Laramie. If you want to be out, you want to go do things. So you just got to recruit the character first and foremost. The mentality of the man is vastly more important than the talent. So probably the makeup and the mentality of the man that we're recruiting, the young man that we're recruiting, has got to be vastly important. Can you survive cold weather? Okay. And we're not going to lie to you. We're going to make sure you
understand. I will second that. I've been there on a broadcast and I get off the plane. It's like, holy cow.
You're 72 and sunny in the gym. So if you'd like to be in the gym, then cold weather is not a problem, because you're probably just avoiding it at all times. And you're going to become a really good basketball player in the process because you like to be in the gym. Coach Leonard's, I love how simple he keeps it. But, one of the first things we're going to ask on any player to recruit, are you moody? Because you can't. Moody and emotional players don't make it in our program. And if you're moody, then you're probably going to change like the weather changes out here. So you're definitely not going to make it in Laradice. And the second thing is, do you love it or do you live it? Do you like to practice? If you love it, love to practice, really practice, not like I going to do an Instagram workout, but love to practice, live in the gym, then you will love Laramie, period. Because everybody else is about the wrong crap. I mean, if you really break it down to becoming a good college basketball player, it's pretty basic. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to go to school, you're going to be in the gym, you're going to have a little bit of a social life. And let's be honest, it's not that much of a social life. That's why I said a little bit of a social life. So if you're about the right stuff, going to school and getting in the gym, then you're going to love Laramie. If you're about the BS, then you're probably going to want to go to a lot of other places that have a nicer location with more things to do. But those things to do aren't basketball, period.
But it's so true. If you want to be successful in anything, you prioritize and you work towards those things that are going to make you successful in the things that you want to be at. I remember after my rookie year in the NBA, I was back in Spokane and I was in the gym with John Stockton working out. And his first question to me before we started shooting was, do you still love it? And like to this day, I mean, that conversation was 19, 20 years ago. I still remember that conversation just because it's so true. Whether it's, after an AAU season, you've gone and played in different cities, or you've gone in college or in the NBA, if you still love it, you're still going to work at it. Now, there's nothing wrong with a day off here or there because everybody needs it. Yep. But when it's time to work, are you putting in that work? Are you getting better at it?
100%. This is what we love. We break players down three categories, right? Live it, love it, like it. And here's the deal. If you're a like it guy, live it guys will destroy you. Like, if you're just like it, a live it guy is going to destroy you. I mean, he's just going to make, you're going to be so miserable, because live it guys, I mean, it's the literal definition. They live it. They're in the gym. And every time they're in the gym, guess what? You're not in the gym. And they're going to make you feel like you should be in the gym more, but you're not, and you don't really love it, or you just like it. So Love it, guys. The kicker with the love it guy is if coached correctly and really, you know, spurred on in the right direction, they can become live it guys. Since they do have a love for the game, they can learn to live it. But at the end of the day, worst case scenario is if you coach a love it guy the wrong way, then that's how they become a like it guy and burn out. And so that's why the philosophy of, I think, a love it guy, really, you want to tilt those scales to, like, let's help them love it more. Let's help them find a deeper understanding for why they're here, why they're playing, so they can live it. Because even if it's just for college, for that 4-year snapshot, live that. I mean, it's so small in the grand scheme of things. If we're going to live, you know, whatever, on average, you know, my family on average lives till about 50, so I'm screwed, but everybody else probably lives till about 80. And if that's your lifespan, why not give that 4 years everything you got and live it, knowing that you'll have no regrets outside of this? Because what happens, Ricardo Patton, former coach I used to work for at Colorado, North Illinois, used to say this phrase all the time, and I love it. He was a thought-provoking guy. Don't say hello when it's time to say goodbye. And too many players get to their senior year and they want to say hello to the weight room. They want to say hello to their tutor. They want to say hello to extra work. It's time to say goodbye. At this point, there's nothing more you can do. It's wrap. So you should start saying hello early on, freshman year, 4 years, just live it.
Powerful. That is awesome. I love it. You've really, to use one of your phrases, you've really brought the juice. I appreciate the time. I know when I texted you to set this up, I said probably 20, 25 minutes, but you've dropped a lot of great stories, a lot of insight. You know, the fact that we've gotten to know each other a little bit over the last 6 months or so has been awesome. I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you during this upcoming college basketball season. And we got to do it again sometime, because there's been a lot of good stories shared, and I'm sure you got a lot more to share in the future.
We can go way further down the rabbit hole, Dan, I'm telling you, man. So this was fun. I appreciate it, man. It's a real authentic and organic conversation, which is the best ones, and in my opinion. So we could do this all day.
Absolutely. Well, we'll have to reschedule for another time, maybe this fall. Or if not, we'll get like maybe an hour or an hour and a half next spring and summer, when hopefully Wyoming makes a deep run in the NCAA tournament, because I like the pieces that you guys are at returning in Maldonado, in EK, and then the couple transfers that you guys have. You know, I think you guys are primed to have another big season.
Put that in the universe, but always remember this too. The best recruits are the ones you already got, right? And so, like, that's what this great part about our program is, that there's always going to be somebody or someone that comes up from behind that's been in our program that's continually developing with that everyday dude mentality. So it's going to be great.
Awesome. Thanks again, Coach. Appreciate you joining.